Okay, to get started off tonight, so we're covering lessons 30 to 33 in the book tonight. And so this will be the fall of Israel, fall of Jerusalem, or fall of Judah, so it's fall of Samaria and Jerusalem, respectively. And then also going to get into the captivity as well. So from, let me turn this on so it'll work. So from the last class, so last class was Tim giving us that that complete narrative cycle, that narrative story told all in one setting. So, you know, think of that cycle, 1, 2, and 3, all put together to tell it in a nice, concise storyline. So that was last class. Class before that was Scott getting us into the divided kingdom. And so as we think about the classes down to this point, all these summary review kind of classes, you know, kind of think about where we are on the maps with that. So where we started off with Genesis and the patriarchs, which would actually be starting off, you know, over off the right side of this map, Tigris and Euphrates area, and then the patriarchs, you know, Abraham getting us up over to Haran and then down into the central part of Israel. And then with Exodus and conquest, you know, we moved down into Egypt so we could exit out of Egypt. So coming down here, coming back up. With the wandering, so staying there in the desert wilderness area, but then with invasion and conquest, moving from there up and around, coming up over beside Jericho to come in and take the land. And then, of course, with united and divided kingdom, you know, most all that's taking place in this central core part of Israel here. So as we think about where we're moving geographically with these different time periods, that kind of helps me to think about it that way. And so where we are right now, too, with end of divided kingdom and captivity. So, you know, we're about halfway through the 17 periods, just a little over halfway through. And so if we think about our timeline slides that we had before in our timeline class, so 721, 586. So, you know, that range, 721 would be the fall of Samaria. 586 is going to be the fall of Jerusalem. So that's kind of sandwiched the time frame here. So with that, you know, we do have those events, the two cities falling, and of course, Assyria taking Samaria, and then Babylon via Nebuchadnezzar taking Jerusalem. And so with the world events, at least as we think about world events in this region, in this area, I mean, it is those events. It's Assyrian domination, Babylonian domination. Same slide, just a different photo. So thinking about, again, back to the timeline lecture. So these reliefs, the Lachish reliefs, are actually in the British Museum. And there's a siege engine there going up the siege ramp that they built at Lachish. So some secular history things that we can correlate here with that. Move on down the timeline, a little bit more to the right on the timeline, 606. So beginning of captivity time frame to the 400s, getting into the years of biblical silence. And so with that, you know, we have the captivity. The returns also happened during this time. So think Zerubbabel rebuilding the temple, think Nehemiah rebuilding the walls, and the temple being completed, and your last prophets such as Malachi. And same slide, different picture. This is the picture of the Cyrus cylinder. So when Cyrus and the Persians made the decree that captive people could return to their homelands and begin to return to the worship that they used to do in their homelands. So this is an archaeological artifact of that. It's written in Akkadian language, but it's in cuneiform script. And so that's just another secular piece of history we can tie back to this time period that will be, well, not looking at the returns tonight. Scott will be hitting that next class. Okay, so as we think about our messages, concepts and messages for this time period. So, you know, so here we have narratives about God's people continuing to stray from that covenant that he made with them, and then the consequences that come from that. So, you know, so, and we start to think about this. So think about kings of Israel. So how many good kings did we have in Israel? There's a very specific number of good kings in Israel. None, absolutely none. And because of that, they were taken away first. Judah did somewhat better, but still didn't completely wipe out idolatrous worship and things like that. So they're eventually taken away as well. You know, the prophets were bringing the message the whole time of what was coming, but that didn't change things. But what we do see with this, as I've said on these, you know, usually on this slide, I have a point about, you know, God making the big picture happen, the middle picture, and the little picture, you know, with individuals, with his group of people, but then at the high level overall. So, you know, we're still seeing that because he will restore a remnant. That's a phrase that's used a number of times, and even one of Bob and Sanders' books is a remnant shall return. So so that concept is certainly there in this. If we're thinking about geographic details, so tonight we'll look at the fall of Samaria. So we'll look at that on a map. Also with Jerusalem, and we're going to get into a little bit more with Jerusalem, not just with the fall of Jerusalem, but also with the some geographic details of the prophets that deal with Jerusalem as well, like where they were located and prophesying about and from, and then where they were not as well. All right, so as we think about this time period, so Judah alone. So if we think about the scriptures that we're covering from a king's perspective and a chronicle's perspective, so with with the period of Judah alone in Kings, so if you look at 2 Kings, about chapters 18 to 25 will be Judah alone, and then in Chronicles, it's chapters 30 to 36. So chapter content-wise for those two books, you know, not really a whole lot for the Judah alone and captivity period, but the prophets do give you a lot more content during these time periods. But as we're thinking about the prophets, at the northern Israel, or the northern kingdom Israel, we have Jonah, Amos, and Hosea, and get into the captivity, and then we have the major prophets there as well. So Jeremiah, who's prophesying in and from Jerusalem. Daniel is taken captive in 605. Ezekiel is also taken captive 597. So they end up over in Babylon. And of course, Judah falls, Jerusalem falls 586, and that starts the captivity of 70 years. So we've looked at this one, this map too, a few times as well. So just to kind of get us from where we were, United Kingdom, and the extents that David and Solomon would have controlled. So, you know, that large area there, and then also the area that's annexed east of the Jordan. So you know, that's where we start, but very quickly, divided kingdom, end up with Israel in the north, Judah in the south. And then when Assyria dominates the region, that, you know, you have Assyria coming in and taking Samaria and the northern kingdom of Israel at that point. So the fall of Samaria. So again, 721-ish BC. And so so you have Shalmaneser the V, that actually the Assyrian king that started the process of taking Samaria, and then Sargon the II finishes the job. And so slide that we looked at a couple classes ago, just to kind of get us reoriented with, you know, what it looks like in this area. So, you know, so this is the photos I showed you from Jerusalem. So this view cone here, you know, perspective of the camera looking that way. So Jerusalem is right here, but if we're looking at hill country area of Jerusalem, not looking right at Jerusalem right now because it's just, you know, modern buildings all over it, but so what the hills around Jerusalem would have looked like. If we're up in Shiloh, looking north, so not quite up to Samaria, you know, Samaria is going to be up here. But, you know, similar hills, not as much vegetation in this picture. But that's what it looks like, you know, a little bit further south of Samaria. But if we actually look at Samaria, the hill, the tail of Samaria, so, you know, that's the hill that it is there. And so the hills, as you move a little bit further north, they do get a little bit higher and lower, a little bit more exaggeration in the topography. But that's what the Samaria hills looks like in the site of Samaria. And so the pictures that Scott showed in his last class too, so you have the palace structures there. So these are, major architecture, palatial type structures that would be from the time frame of 8th, 9th century BC. So think Omri, Ahab time frame would be from where these structures are from, time frame wise. But that's Samaria being taken. Okay, and so here, this is just a video just to give you a good sense of the hills around the Samaria area. Now, you don't actually see the tail or the hill of Samaria itself, but it's just the hills in the area to give you a feel for that. And so, you know, one thing is you see these hills as you can think about. So they are high hills with low valleys in between. So, you know, if you have a fortification city on the top of this, it's very defensible. You can see people all around, right? But it's also the fishbowl effect. You're on a hill, but there's other hills around you. So your enemies can sit there and watch you, and if they want to lay siege to you, they can camp out and watch you from the adjacent hills as well. And so, you know, that's a modern village there. But you get the sense of how, you know, say you're trying to defend this, be very easy. But again, it's also easy to be watched from there and to be sieged. So that's hills of Samaria. Okay, and so that is Samaria being being taken by Assyria. So next, so you do have Assyria actually trying to take Jerusalem as well. So because you know, so Babylon comes into power fully. And, well, before that happens, you have Assyria again trying to take Jerusalem. And so they make that attempt. But as we know from Isaiah, with Hezekiah and Sennacherib, when Sennacherib tries to come and take Jerusalem, how does that play out and work out for him? Yeah. So you have, you know, God coming in, striking the Assyrian army overnight, and that's all the story for them in trying to take Jerusalem. So there was an attempt, but wasn't successful by the power of God. But what happens after that is that Babylon does come to power, and they come to dominate the region. So when Babylon comes in to take Jerusalem. So what happens with that is that Nebuchadnezzar comes down in and takes the fortified cities that would be on the edge of the hill country. So, you know, central hill country is going to be here. So out here you're on the edge of that hill country in the Shephelah area. But you would have had these fortified cities. So think Azekah, which is that city there, and then Lachish as well. So those are going to be your fortified cities guarding some of the valleys coming up into the hill country, that, which is how you would access Jerusalem. But they come in and take those cities, but then also lay siege to Jerusalem as well. And Jerusalem is taken by Babylon. And we're about to get a little bit more into detail on the geography and topography around Jerusalem in a moment. But so now we're going to be fully in the captivity with the fall of Jerusalem. So captivity from 605 to 536. And so again, we've already said our prophets there are Jeremiah in Jerusalem, Daniel being over in Babylon, 605, and then Ezekiel being taken there also in one of the swipes through there in 597. And then, of course, Jerusalem ultimately falling in 586. And then the captivity lasting for 70 years. So with the prophets, so as we said, in Kings and Chronicles, you don't have a whole lot of chapters dedicated this time period, but the prophets do talk a lot about it, right? So with Jeremiah, and actually, so, you know, think about the prophets saying a lot. So Jeremiah, so Bible trivia, anybody know how many chapters there are in Jeremiah? Without looking down, if you need a hint, it's a few more than 50. 52. So 52 chapters in Jeremiah. And a lot of that content is the prophecies of Judah, about Judah and the kingdom of God. A lot of it is judgment on other nations. So all the nations we've been dealing with up to this point, Egypt, Philistia, Moab, Babylon. So, you know, all these nations have judgments pronounced against them. And then a lot about the captivity of Judah as well. Think about Daniel. So not as much chapter content-wise, only 12 chapters of that. But and of course, with Daniel, so he's in Babylon. And actually, so where in Babylon is Daniel? Where's he actually located? He's in the palace, right? So he is in Babylon, but not like Ezekiel. Ezekiel is also in Babylon, but Ezekiel is out along the rivers and on the canals that are there in the Mesopotamian central area there. Between the Tigris and Euphrates. So, but he's out there with the common people, not in the palace like Daniel was. But, you know, so with this content, you think about Daniel's faithfulness. So with Daniel chapter 1, What's this faithfulness? What was Daniel not going to do in the situation that he was in? So he wasn't going to defile himself, and his friends were not either. And so, you know, that's that core central message, but think about where that's happening. That's happening in Babylon, actually in the palace, is where this is occurring. So then you have Nebuchadnezzar's dreams, dreams of the golden image, and the dreams about Nebuchadnezzar being humbled. And of course, you have Daniel interpreting those dreams. You have the handwriting on the wall, so with Nebuchadnezzar's son, and Daniel in the lion's den. So when we swap to the lion's den, you're going from Babylonian to Medo-Persian king Darius. So you know that's some of the content of Daniel. And when we think about that, you know, that's not going on here, but we're over here off to the side, right? So that map doesn't cover it. We have to shift a little bit right to get over to Babylon. So that's where this is occurring, at least with Daniel and Ezekiel. Okay, but I want to camp out here with Ezekiel for a little bit. So if you look at the book of Ezekiel, you can break it up a couple different ways, but one common one in the way that Bob and Sandra's preference, if you look in their book where they're covering Ezekiel, is this three-part breakup. So you have chapters 1 to 24 that are the judgments against Judah and Jerusalem, 25 to 32, judgments against the other nations, so a lot like Jeremiah pronouncing judgments on the other nations that are around. And then 33 to 48 to finish it out, God's proclamations of restoration and salvation that's going to happen. The one I want to focus on here is the 1 to 24. And actually, if you want to be turning over, we'll be reading from Ezekiel chapter 8 and then some in 10 and 11 as well. But we'll start. We're just going to read here in Ezekiel 8, starting in verse 1. In the sixth year, in the sixth month, on the fifth day of the month, as I sat in my house with the elders of Judah sitting before me, the hand of the Lord God fell upon me there. Then I looked, and behold, a form that had the appearance of a man. Below what appeared to be his waist was fire, and above his waist was something like the appearance of brightness, like a gleaming metal. He put out the form of a hand and took me by a lock of my head. And the Spirit lifted me up between earth and heaven and brought me in visions of God to Jerusalem, to the entrance of the gateway of the inner court that faces north, where was the seat of the image of jealousy, which provokes to jealousy. And behold, the glory of the God of Israel was there, like the vision I saw in the valley. Then he said to me, Son of man, lift up your eyes now toward the north. So I lifted up my eyes toward the north, and behold, north of the altar gate in the entrance was the image of jealousy. And he said to me, Son of man, do you see what they are doing? The great abominations that the house of Israel are committing here to drive me far from my sanctuary, but you will still see greater abominations. Okay, so that's the setup for this here, what we're about to look at and think about. And so you know, look back through this inner court that faces north, the altar gate in the entrance, drive me far away from my sanctuary. So where are we at? What structure are we talking about here? Temple, yeah, right. So we're at the temple. So in setting this up for chapter 10, where we're going to describe, Ezekiel's going to describe the presence of God. And what you're setting up for is the presence of God that is, you know, normally in the temple. It's going to be described, but it's going to be set up to move out of the temple. And so we're going to read chapter 10 for that. Then I looked, and behold, on the expanse that there was over the heads of the cherubim, there appeared above them something like a sapphire, an appearance like a throne. And he said to the man clothed in linen, Go in among the whirling wheels underneath the cherubim, fill your hands with burning coals from between the cherubim, and scatter them over the city. And he went in before my eyes. Now the cherubim were standing on the south side of the house. When the man went in, and a cloud filled the inner court, and the glory of the Lord went up from the cherub to the threshold of the house. And then the house was filled with the cloud. And the court was filled with the brightness of the glory of the Lord. And the sound of the wings of the cherubim was heard as far as the outer court, like the voice of God Almighty when he speaks. And when he commanded the man clothed in linen, take fire from between the whirling wheels, from between the cherubim, and he went in and stood beside a wheel. And a cherub stretched out his hand from between the cherubim to the fire that was between the cherubim, and took some of it and put it into the hands of the man clothed in linen, who took it and went out. The cherubim appeared to have the form of a human hand under their wings. And I looked, and behold, there were four wheels beside the cherubim, one beside each cherub, and the appearance of the wheels was like sparkling beryl. And as for their appearance, the four had the same likeness, as if a wheel were within a wheel. And when they went in any of their four directions without turning as they went. But in whatever direction the front wheel faced, the others followed without turning as they went. And their whole body, their rims, and their spokes, their wings, and the wheels were full of eyes all around, the wheels that the four of them had. As for the wheels, they were called in my hearing the whirling wheels. And every one had four faces. And the first face was the face of the cherub, and the second was the face of a human face, and the third the face of a lion, and the fourth the face of an eagle. And the cherub mounted up. These were the living creatures that I saw by the Chebar Canal. And when the cherubim went, the wheels went beside them. And when the cherubim lifted up their wings to mount up from the earth, the wheels did not turn from beside them. When they stood still, these stood still. And when they mounted up, these mounted up with them. For the spirit of the living creatures was in them. Then the glory of the Lord went out from the threshold of the house and stood over the cherubim. And the cherubim lifted up their wings and mounted up from the earth before my eyes as they went out, with the wheels beside them. And they stood at the entrance of the east gate of the house of the Lord, and the glory of God of Israel was over them. These were the living creatures that I saw underneath the God of Israel by the Chebar Canal. And I knew that they were cherubim. Each had four faces and each four wings, and underneath their wings, the likeness of human hands. And as for the likeness of their faces, they were the same faces whose appearance I had seen by the Chebar Canal. Each of them went straight forward. And so that finishes up chapter 10. But then just the first part in the first verse of chapter 11 here. The Spirit lifted me up and brought me to the east gate of the house of the Lord, which faces east. And behold, the entrance of the gateway, there were 25 men. And then just going to skip down to the core of what we're getting at here is chapter 11, verses 22 to 25. Then the cherubim lifted up their wings with the wheels beside them, and the glory of God of Israel was over them. And the glory of the Lord went up from the midst of the city and stood on the mountain that is on the east side of the city. Then the Spirit lifted me up and brought me in the vision by the Spirit of God to Chaldea, to the exiles. Then the vision that I had seen went up from me, and I told the exiles all the things that the Lord had shown me. Okay, so as I mentioned before, we haven't really looked at Jerusalem in great detail yet, but we're about to do that. As we're doing that, I want you to think about a couple of these scriptures. And so some of this, you may not see how this connects, but just give me a minute, and especially on the last couple points on this slide, we'll get there as we get to some of the other slides and some of the photos. Okay, so Joshua, chapter 2, verses 5 and 7. So we're back in Jericho with Rahab and the spies. And those verses are where the spies had, well, she still had them there, but she had told the people of the city who came looking for them that, you know, they came in, she did not know who they were, and they've already left. And so they left, and the people who came looking for them went to pursue them. And so they went outside the city, and do you remember which direction they went when they were pursuing them, when we talked about that? Yeah, so that's where the spies actually ended up going. But where did they go? Where did she tell the pursuers to go look for them? Toward the river. And they went to the fords, you know, that phrase, the fords of the Jordan. And so that fords of the Jordan phrase. So that's also a phrase used in these other passages you see in here. And just, you know, for one example, Judges 3:28, that would be Ehud. So when Ehud killed Eglon, because, you know, so Moab had came and taken Jericho, and Eglon was there. Ehud went into Jericho, killed him there in the palace there. And with that event and that happening, they ended up, you know, Ehud went back in to the people, into the hills, got the people, came out, and went and took the fords of the Jordan. So, but the point is that the fords of the Jordan is where, you know, if you're going to go and escape, that's the direction you're going to go. You're going to go across the Jordan. I'm just going to very quickly read, and you can turn there if you want to. If not, I'll just read it quickly. 2 Kings 25, verses 1 to 6. And this is about the fall of Jerusalem that we just talked about in Zedekiah. And in the ninth year of his reign, in the 10th month, on the 10th day of the month, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came with all his army against Jerusalem and laid siege to it. And they built the siege works all around it. So the city was besieged till the 11th year of King Zedekiah. On the 9th day of the 4th month, the famine was so severe in the city that there was no food for the people of the land. Then a breach was made in the city, and all the men of war fled by night by the way of the gate between the two walls, by the king's garden. And the Chaldeans were around the city, and they went in the direction of the Arabah. But the army of the Chaldeans pursued the king and overtook him in the plains of Jericho. Okay, so why is the king going to the plains of Jericho? He's not going to go to the plains of Jericho and stop there. He's going to the plains of Jericho to get across the Jordan, the fords of the Jordan, to get away and to try to preserve his life. But he didn't make it. They caught him, right? So that's what Zedekiah. But then we have the Ezekiel, what we just read. And so I'm about to tie this together with where the Spirit of the Lord went, as Ezekiel described it, up on the hill, the mountain, to the east of Jerusalem. So when we're also down with Christ, Matthew 23. So this is where he's pronouncing the woes upon Jerusalem. And then in that, or just after that, in the first few verses of chapter 24 there, he goes up to the Mount of Olives. Also, Matthew chapter 26, where Jesus is in the garden, and this is where they come and take him from the garden. And this explain a little bit more about why I'm using that one in a moment. But again, this concept of Mount of Olives, east side of the city. Okay, so here's Jerusalem. So this is just a good, simple map of Jerusalem. And so you have Kidron Valley here, have the Hinnom Valley here. There's another valley right here, and you'll see this in the next photo, so Tyropian Valley. You probably won't know or may not be familiar with that name. But actually, this valley here, you really don't see it now. It's filled in for the most part. You know, modern buildings are covering it, so you really don't, if you know it's there, know what you're looking for, you can see it. But for the most part, you won't. But Kidron Valley, still something that's there and obvious. So is the Hinnom Valley as well. And what we're looking at here is this time frame that we're in. So Iron Age, 500-600-ish BC time frame, from where the upper area where the temple would be, Temple Mount, and then what's usually called the City of David, kind of this oblong part here. But again, this top-down shot looking. This is a typical reconstruction from this time frame that you'll see, and these will vary a little bit, but you're seeing kind of that oblong shape here. So this would be Kidron Valley here, Hinnom Valley here, and the Tyropian Valley there. Okay, so this is a top-down shot, just Google Maps top-down shot. So temple area, and of course the current Temple Mount area here. And then that City of David area would be like here. And so you're going to have Kidron Valley here. And then this would be Mount of Olives area. Okay, this next shot, I'm just going to overlay, take the background off of that map, change the contour lines, different color. That's the map as it was, but if we try to see through it a little bit, so that's kind of what it looks like. And for any of you geography, archaeology nerds here or listening online, if you take this PowerPoint and lift that image off, so this is not perfect, it's not a perfect overlay, but it's pretty close, gives us the general idea of what we're looking at. But it's just helpful to see it with kind of that simple map there. But going to have two photos here, so two perspectives. One, so this is, you know, cameras here, looking out to the spread here. So going to be, first image is going to be looking north up the Kidron Valley. Next image will be looking south down the Kidron Valley. Okay, so this is looking north, Kidron Valley here, at your Temple Mount area there. So we're pretty much looking straight north into it. This area hill right here is actually what you're seeing here, just from a little bit different perspective, right? And from a different angle. Okay, yeah, and so, and I've got some drone video. This is gonna be this perspective. So it's what we just saw, except you're gonna have the drone from these perspectives looking almost directly east, a little bit more south, and then almost directly south. And so we're trying to get a view of the valley here. So actually, Jeremy, if you can pause that right there. Yeah, so so just to get you oriented, so that's actually Western Wall is right there. So Temple Mount area, that City of David area would extend on down here. But what you're seeing right there, so that's Mount of Olives area. And so Kidron Valley is right there. Okay, you can go ahead. Yeah, you can just start it over. Yep. Yeah, so that's your that's Mount of Olives there. Get a little bit better sense as it moves around how deep the valley is there. Kind of rounds the corner of the hill there. Okay. All right. So the last photos I want to get to is this perspective. Okay. So, you know, what we were looking at just now was there. If you go up on the ridge of the Mount of Olives, and this is another thing, this next picture is actually, it's a little more north, maybe even like up to a half mile or maybe a little bit more, so not exactly where this arrow is, but just getting the concept. If you're on top of the Mount of Olives, the view that you're going to have off to the east. So that's a little bit off to the east, but trying to give you a sense for what that Mount of Olives hill coming off the backside of it. Again, we're up just a little bit, but still that same ridge. If you go over there, you're getting back down into Jerusalem. But and that's that same road there. But if we tilt over and up just a little bit, so looking almost due east. Okay, so what you're seeing here, I don't know how well you can see it with the colors on this screen, but you're looking across Judean wilderness. That ridge right there, on the other side of that, is Jericho in the valley there. That ridge right there, that's across the Jordan Valley. So part of the perspective I'm trying to give you here is that you're in Jerusalem, you go down in the Kidron Valley, you come up on the Mount of Olives, you can look and see, I mean, you can't see Jericho, but you can see the ridge, and I don't know if it's actually that particular ridge, but in there, Jericho is down in the valley there. And of course you have, you know, Jordan River, you have the Transjordan Plateau over there. And so this, you know, this mountain to the east. So now, if you're actually in Jericho, like with Rahab and the spies, or if you're Ehud, so you know you're there closer to it, so you actually can see the Jordan Valley. It's this concept of if you're going to escape somewhere, that's where you can go. That's the river you can cross to get away. With Zedekiah, same concept. But now when we're talking about Ezekiel, we're just talking about going up to the Mount of Olives. So you go up to the Mount of Olives, and you can look and have that perspective of going off into the wilderness, off across the Jordan. But also too, what I wanted to connect with this is, you know, with Christ. So making those pronouncements against Jerusalem and then going up to, or at the same time being on or around the Mount of Olives. And then Matthew 26, where, Jesus was taken from the garden. So that garden area, you know, where exactly, not for sure, but you know, it's going to be somewhere in that Mount of Olives area, right? So the point with all these points is just that if you're Ezekiel, or if you're hearing Ezekiel's message, and you're in Babylon hearing his message, or anywhere else and hearing his message, and you know Jerusalem, and you know the valleys around Jerusalem, you know the hills around Jerusalem, you have a sense of what this look and feels like. And it's not just something described and, you know, it's something very vague and has to be interpreted. A lot of the prophetical stuff does, right? But with this, it doesn't have to, because you can actually see it. Because when you go up to the Mount of Olives and you have this view and perspective, you can see that it's a way of escape. Or you can know that you can walk right back over the ridge, and then you can see, you can see Jerusalem. Okay, so that gets us through the captivity, and then so now we're in captivity for 70 years, and so and again trying to just give the impression and the feel for what it's like to have seen or have described the glory of the Lord leaving the temple. Where does it go? All that we read is setting up for the glory of the Lord to be moved, His presence to be moved, and where does it go? It goes up on and goes up and sets on the mountain there. But that gets us fully into the captivity, and then the return will be next that Scott will get us into with the next class.